Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me tonight is my co-host, Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. Today, we're going to be joined by Kaylee Adams, a former member of the 2x2 cult, known by its members as the Truth or the Way. This group is unique for its rejection of any official church title or name, but it's often called the 2x2s because of the traveling preachers who usually work in pairs. Kaylee has been courageous enough to come on and share her experiences here. And she also shares her experiences on TikTok, which is where I found her. She's shedding life on the inside of this cult-like religious group. Kaylee, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us. So where would you like to start?
I guess I'll just go over a little bit of the background. I know this is not a group a lot of people are familiar with. And I think without the background, my story probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So what the 2x2s are, they're a group. It's kind of hard to number. At some point, it was probably over a million members. Today, estimates are probably around 20,000 to 30,000. But of course, because of that secretive nature, it's really, really hard to say. They are all over the world. They're in almost every country. They have a series of pretty strict rules. So you're supposed to keep pretty modest. In my day, in the 90s, 2000s, early 2010s, that did mean you looked a little bit like FLDS, I would say. Pretty, the long hair, the big pioneer dresses, no haircuts for ladies, no beards for men, no alcohol, very minimal jewelry, no TV. No makeup. Interestingly enough about the TV thing, Netflix. So if you have a screen and Netflix or Hulu or something like this, that's fine. That is allowed. But cable television or satellite particularly are not allowed.
And I find that interesting because Hulu and Netflix are some of the streaming devices that do a lot of documentaries on cults. Do you think any idea why they allowed those two?
I think they have the speed at which they need to update these rules, especially because they're all unwritten. They've changed a lot. It used to be in kind of my dad's day, it was even stricter. No Christmas trees. You couldn't have like flesh colored tights. You couldn't have a wedding ring. You couldn't dance. No radio. So the rules are pretty, they're not written anywhere. And that allows them to be pretty fluid. So that both means, okay, you can do something like Netflix, Hulu to get around, and then it's difficult to kind of rewrite the rule. It has to be, it's kind of a slow process to restructure everything.
I'm going to venture a guess that maybe it's because they think they can control or tell you what you can and can't watch on those platforms easier. But that's just a guess on my part. Maybe they give a list of, these are the shows you're allowed to watch on Netflix and Hulu. I don't know. That's kind of weird, though.
Not really discussed, as strange as that sounds. So it was discussed, you're not supposed to have a TV. But even before Netflix and Hulu, we had kind of a concept called the cupboard TV. And so it was very common. Lots of people wanted a TV, but they didn't want people to know they one. So you'd have kind of one of those rolly things, like what teachers used to bring into the schools all the time when it was movie day. And you'd hide it in a cupboard. So if you knew another member was coming over, or a worker or someone like this, you roll it into the cupboard. And that was your cupboard TV. It was very similar for us. We had a VCR that wasn't connected to cable, so technically following the rules, but it was in my parents' bedroom and where the door was always closed.
So knowing how streaming works, you would need the internet. So the internet was allowed?
Internet is totally fine. It's actually a very popular tool now. They kind of like to send big group emails, though, of course, they don't have anything like an official website or anything like that. They really like the internet for its communication value since they are over the world.
So what about social media?
Few workers say, no, you shouldn't have it, especially now that some kind of things about the church is coming out, and some workers that have it. So again, kind of a gray area, kind of like where they prefer to keep things so that if you are doing something they don't like, they can say, they can point to that boundary you're crossing. So I think they kind of like to keep it unclear, just so you're kind of on that unequal footing. It also, it gets a little frustrating because, you know, if I say something like, oh, I hated these dressing rules that we had, people will genuinely say, those rules don't exist. We don't have those rules. What do you mean? Even though, you know, I have all these pictures of me. It's not something like, I think about, you know, the Mormon church, where they had this, you know, very racist rule about Black people. And then because it was set in stone, they had to roll it back and be like, well, never mind. We don't have to do that. We can just say, no, we didn't say that. We didn't say that.
Okay. Because I'm in the IT world and I've also been educated through this podcast and watched many documentaries, which is kind of how I got into this. I watched the documentary on Twin Flames and I got really angry. There is so much more information on the internet than there is on TV. So I think you mentioned that you couldn't have cable TV. Cable TV would bring in NBC News, or let's say NBC, Fox, CNN. They might bring the Discovery Channel, you know, the entertainment, educational shows. The internet, you could type in anything that would be critical thinking, like. So I don't know what some of your teachings were, but if I had a doubt about something, I could Google. I just find it odd that they would allow you to have internet, but cable TV, which many people, and I know this was 10, 15 years ago, but cable TV is kind of dying off now. It's like people are cutting cable and they're all going to streaming. It just kind of seems a little back-assward that they're thinking. Again, I know this was a while back, so maybe cable TV was still very prominent back then.
Point. But it's something that I really struggled with after we left was, so I'll talk a little bit about these terms, but the terms we use for kind of our structure and the way we do things, like Melody was saying, we don't use any official name. If we're going to go somewhere, we'd say, oh, we're going to meeting. And so our preachers are called workers, our meetings are called meetings or conventions. We have overseers, we have, you know, people call it the way, the truth, the light. Nobody ever said two by two. That wasn't a term I learned until years and years later. So I did Google these things as soon as I could, as soon as I had, you know, the critical thinking skills. I did. And what I found was nothing, you know, two by two Home Depot wood sizes. Like it was so difficult to actually, there is a lot more information now. It was so difficult because everything was so secretive. I didn't know how it worked. I didn't know, you know, what our hierarchy was. I didn't know anything about the history. What I have been taught, what we're taught still, is that we have been a thing since Jesus died. This is how Jesus wanted it. This is what Jesus originally set up, and that's how it's been since then. If you ask the average member, that's what they would say it was. So it's just so vague that it was difficult to even know what to Google.
Okay. So I think we kind of put the cart before the horse. What is it that this cult organization preached? So what denomination? Was it Catholic? Was it Orthodox Jews? Was it...
from a very, one of the first big words I ever knew was non-denominational, because I had a lot of questions about what we were, of course. And always the answer I would get is, we are non-denominational. We are not Baptist. We are not Catholic. We are not anything like that. The belief is that the church as a whole, the idea of a church, is materialistic. It's based a lot more in, you know, men's wants and wealth and stuff like that. So rather than having a church building and one set priest, we have two, we'll have groups. So we have either two men or two women. The way it's always constructed is there's an elder worker who has been in the work for a long, long, long time, and a younger worker who is newer. And these people, there's no training. You basically go right in as the younger worker, 18, 19, 20. You usually start very, very young. And the way these people work is they're homeless. They have nothing. They have a car that is donated by another member of the church. They have some clothes, and they stay in the members' houses. And so they go from house to house to house. They go from place to place to place. A lot of the time, they'll cover several states and even several countries.
What did they teach you? So you mentioned something about this goes far as back as right after the days of Jesus. So did you believe in Jesus?
Strong belief in Jesus. Nothing. How would I say this? Canonical changes to the Bible. They teach the full Bible. They use the King James Bible. We do have our own hymn book, but we don't have any additional books or anything like that. And it is a little bit similar in style. At least the Sunday morning meetings are a little bit similar in style to Quaker meetings, where you get up and you say what you've been thinking about that week. There is a lot of something, I think, I don't know much about Quaker meetings, but what I've witnessed, there's a lot more crying in the 2x2 ones. There's a lot of weeping about, you know, everyone else is going to hell. I am unworthy of God's love, and I can't believe that he would talk to someone. A lot of crying. And then where the workers are is you meet three times a week. So the Sunday meetings are Sunday morning, and then you have gospel meetings two other times. And that's where the meetings give just sermons that honestly aren't too different typically from what you'd hear. And, you know, the average Christian, you know, being better, being more charitable, being closer to God, stuff like that. It's also, we have a convention once a year. So, and we have so many of these conventions. There will be multiple in every state, and people will come from all sorts of zip codes. There will be hundreds and hundreds of people to come to another member's property. It's usually, they have a big barn, which sounds a little bit like a joke, but that's literally, we all sit in the barn, and you would try not to pass out because it was almost always in the summer. And you would listen to these people all day for about 4 or 5 days. And that's kind of our big get together of the year, like our church camp a little bit.
Okay, so now I'm going to circle back. And Melody, at any point, I know you probably have questions. I'm going to circle back to the Google thing. So if you're sitting in a barn for 4 days, listening for hours and on end about whatever they're preaching, that's where I would say, and I'm oversimplifying this because I, and to the audience, everybody knows I'm not a cult survivor. But to me, I would think that I would say, well, that doesn't make sense. Or maybe I would go fact check that. And that's the only reason I brought up the Google thing, because you could fact check some of the preachings that they were preaching, and you would find maybe to the contrary, or you might find another cult organization's different belief system. I just thought it was odd that they would allow you to do that. So, but they must have had some sort of a hold over you where they really brainwashed you.
Generational. I was fourth generation, and it's something to this day that we didn't leave willingly. We were removed, and it's something to this day that I think if my father could go back, he might, because it was something he was raised in, and it was a great comfort to him. It really was, and it's not something I can relate to. Because I was very questioning. I was very, I had a lot of like, but if...
That's my point. Yeah, you questioned a lot. Okay.
But it's definitely not something that's encouraged. We actually aren't even encouraged. And I know that I keep saying we, I think just because it was we for such a long time. we were heavily discouraged from discussing where even the church could have come from, because it does have a founder. But to even ask, to say, oh, I heard that we were founded by this guy named William Irvine in the 1890s in Ireland was unacceptable. They would have a really strong reaction to that. They would claim not to know what you were talking about. They would say, oh, that's a myth. That's a misunderstanding for people outside our church, which is another very common line, which is another thing they can say about the internet stuff, right? Is this is all stuff from outsiders. These people don't understand. They don't know us like that.
But was that true, that a man named William Irvine started this in 1800s in Ireland?
William Irvine, who worked for a church called the Faith Mission for a long time in the 1890s, and then he kind of broke out into his own thing. That's when he started this 2x2 pattern, the workers, his whole kind of church. The reason William Irvine isn't discussed very much, it's a couple reasons, but the main ones being that everyone feels a lot better if we're doing it because Jesus said it's this way, not because some guy from Ireland said it's this way. And also because William himself had some pretty troubling allegations with women. So after a while, he kind of actually got pushed over to Israel. Everyone was like, hey, why don't you go over here and we'll take over? And that's kind of in the 1920s, 1930s sort of area where it started becoming big in the U.S. and Canada, started spreading all over to different countries because all of these missionaries were headed all over the world. So we have the workers. We have the above the workers, we have the overseers. The overseers are picked from former workers. They have a little more power. So they do things like communicating. If you have like something you want to say to every member in the whole state or in a group of states, you'll have a member list. Member lists are very difficult to get a hold of. And they're also responsible for a lot of the movement of the workers themselves. So perhaps if a worker is having an issue in Alabama, they can move them over to another state or even another country with a lot of ease.
Almost sounds like a beehive, like where there's workers and the queen bee. It's kind of a silly analogy, but as you were explaining it, I imagined a beehive because that's there were these workers, and then above the workers, there were the, you get the idea. Melody, do you have any questions?
I do. Okay. You just brought up something very interesting. I mean, I'm going to assume, Kaylee, have you watched The Secrets of the 2x2 Church on Hulu? Have you watched that? Okay.
I'm in it. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, well, wonderful. I don't know how I missed that, but that's awesome. So that's where I'm going to go with when you said when they have problems with the work and they move them around, because this documentary goes into the fact that these traveling ministers, I'm not saying all, I'm not even going to put a number on it. I'm not going to give a percentage, but some of them in their traveling are trusted by these family members, sleeping in children's bedrooms, and are predatory pedophiles that are abusing and molesting children. And they're traveling around and being given access to all these different homes, all these different families, all these different children, to continue harming, hurting, and their predatory nature. What do you know about that? What it was your experience, or what did you hear about that with your experience in the church?
Yeah, I think this folds kind of really nicely into kind of what my experience was. So the worker wouldn't go so far to say, of course, that it's built for this reason, but unfortunately, it's a perfect breeding ground, just in the way that it's structured. So it's both for the workers themselves and any children that are involved in this group. It is an extremely, extremely dangerous situation because for the workers, they're in here from 18, 19, 20. They have no education. They have nothing. They're not allowed to own anything. And if ever at a point they have a change of heart, they want to retire, they want out, there is nothing for you. There is nothing. Hopefully your family is okay with you leaving and still likes you.
So there was like a severance package, but you didn't get severance.
If you become totally infirm, we will sponsor a state-run nursing home for you. So kind of them.
And pay for it. So how, because we hear about this almost every episode about tides, how did they make money?
Huge, huge question mark as far as the 2x2s go. We know they are officially registered as a church with the U.S. government, so they are not paying taxes. Money is for the workers. So basically, they surreptitiously give you a little money. When you leave a house, so you might stay there for a few days or for a few months. The owner of the house is going to kind of surreptitiously hand you money as you leave, and that's all you have to kind of live on. As far as the church as a whole, there seems to have to be an incredible amount of money that nobody can quite trace, because somebody's paying for flights, somebody's paying for all of these travel expenses there are even houses that I know of where they'll send workers that are having, health problems or often mental health problems, big houses specifically for that purpose owned by the church. Again, who covers that? It's totally unclear.
I'm going to guess that there were wealthy people, like in any denomination, like in the Catholic Church where I grew up, there were the wealthy, and then there were the middle class, and then there were the poor, and the wealthy kept the church going. So it almost sounds to me like this 2x2, which they will never refer themselves to, was a very secretive, almost underground kind of operation.
Yes.
Interesting.
It definitely worked in there. Favor. So one example would be, kind of talking about the other side of the bad parts of the way the workers move, is, of course, you are around all these, you are meant to be celibate. You're never allowed to be married. You're never allowed to have sex. There's always a lot of scandal if they're ever found of a girlfriend. It's not allowed.
Okay. Thank you. Wait, stop right there. Because in our other interviews, and I've been learning because I'm a student of cults now, that most cults wanted children because that's the next generation. So you're telling me that you couldn't get married and procreate?
Workers are not everybody. Not everyone becomes a worker because they need places to stay, right? They need people to give them money. So the workers are a pretty small percentage of the actual group. Either you're from kind of a family where it's held in really high regard, or it's something you feel called to.
What you would keep referring to the workers. What did they work at or do?
They're supposed to be Jesus's workers. They're doing Jesus's work.
It's kind of like priests in the Catholic Church, Andrew, and that's kind of like similar to the fact that they wouldn't let priests get married in the Catholic Church. It's a similar thing, which is why I think that they end up being child predators, is because their natural urges are being repressed, and therefore they're being exposed to all these families with children, and that's who ends up being the victims in these situations.
Oh, God, this sounds very eerily close to the Roman Catholic Church, because that's exactly what they did. They made nuns and priests become celibate, take a life of celibacy, and yet they stick them in the schools and in the churches, they would even coach the basketball teams and stuff. And, of course, that's where all the teenagers are and the young kids. So the workers were the preachers, the ones who carry the message of 2x2.
Yes.
Would they be the ones, like, so if you went to one of these barns for this, like in the middle of August, the workers were up there preaching?
Yes. Yes. And so, of course, the difference between these and Catholic preachers is that these ones move everywhere and they live in your house, right? So they add that additional level of danger, and it is incredibly dangerous. My own parents did not allow male workers into our home. It was so well known that it was a dangerous thing to do. And I knew, of course, females are also very capable of molestation, but at this time they found the male workers, they considered them to be a great deal more dangerous.
So there were female workers.
Oh yes, there were. So there's either female pairs and male pairs. The male pairs could work their ways up to be overseer. If you're a woman, you'll be a worker your whole life.
You know, it would seem to me just logic would dictate, but that's because I'm thinking rationally and normally, that let the female and male workers marry.
Time ago, I really don't know why they changed it this way. I do believe it's an aspect of control, right? Of having, you know, this total control so that we don't have, you know, if your wife wants to leave one day, you won't have somebody whispering in your ear. But it used to be, there used to be married worker pairs. And I would agree that would be an incredible thing to happen. But unfortunately, especially with all the trust that we put in these people, and that's exactly right, Melody, they would sleep in children's bedrooms. If you didn't have another room in your house, they would sleep in the same room.
Oh God, that's so immoral to have like a 5-year-old or 8-year-old, and then I really hope you're not going to say they slept in the same bed.
I've heard of it happening. But I do believe there's a little more awareness about that at the very least. But yes, in my own home, only female workers were allowed, and they slept in kind of a wing very far away from our bedrooms because my parents were very aware. It was a well-known fact. I was told of many people that I personally know that had something happen to them.
When did you I don't know how old you are now, but when did you join with your family?
Kind of unofficially apart. I never professed, which is basically just the process of baptizing in, which is usually done 11, 12, 13. My parents never pushed me towards it, and I never felt that call. I also was very, very uncomfortable with what, even though I didn't exactly have words for why, I always felt extremely, extremely uncomfortable with everything I saw going on. So,
and they didn't have a problem with that?
No, very. So I left when I was 15. So I was still pretty young. I think they still had plenty of hopes that I could profess. I'm sure they would have had a problem with it if I had continued.
15. I'm going to say that your parents, it sounds like, exercised some independent critical thinking outside of the group just by the fact that even though the practice was to allow workers to stay in your home and sleep in your children's bedrooms, that your parents were like, yeah, not in our house. So kudos to them for that. I'm going to give them some props where props are due, because it sounds to me like the majority of people in these types of groups just go with the flow and they don't want to put any resistance, even if there's something in the back of their mind saying we probably shouldn't do this or this isn't right. They just do it anyway because they want to conform to the group. So I'm sure even you feel that way, that they deserve some credit for that.
Absolutely. I was raised in a little bit of an unusual circumstance for the group. The vast majority of people are born in to two generational parents. So they've been in for 3, 4, 5 generations. My dad was third generation, but my mom was not raised religiously at all. They met through work. And she was kind of spicy. She is kind of spicy. She's still around. And she liked the idea when my dad said, this is what I was raised in, I'd like to raise our children in this as well. She liked the idea of, you know, love and charity of Christianity. She thought that sounded great. And she was like, okay. And then she got to her first meeting with him and she sees these blank-faced, big bun, pioneer dress people like crying in a circle. And she was like, oh. And she never professed either. She remained very independent and outspoken. She kept her hair very short. So I kind of got to play, you're really not supposed to, but I got to play both sides, I think, a lot more than a lot of my kind of peers in the group did. So I got to hang out with, you know, the pioneers and also a more mainstream crowd. I got to wear pants as long as it wasn't in front of the other members and stuff like that.
Tell us about, so the workers couldn't date. Okay. But the other, so, and forgive me, you probably mentioned what were the non-workers? Like, what were you and your parents called? You're like the parishioners?
Nothing. Just like we didn't have a name, I guess they'd call us the faithful.
Okay. Were you allowed to date? Were you allowed, like, did you have a boyfriend at 15?
Fully encouraged was, so you have these big conventions in the barn, right? And you have breaks between the sermons. And that's kind of where you were able to go find a boy or a girl that you weren't related to, which for such an insular group is sometimes a little. So that was kind of where you were supposed to find a mate, where you were supposed to date. I was young enough when we left that I thankfully didn't ever have to worry about anything like that. But that is typically, you are encouraged to date another member. And that's fine, because that means you'll get married young and have lots of babies, right?
Right. And that's where I was alluding to earlier, but I misunderstood the worker thing. So they did encourage marriages. They did encourage procreation, but just not among the workers. Okay.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Fucking bizarre. I'm sorry. It's just that the whole thing is just really bizarre.
It's culty on a whole nother level, because it's
secret
sect culty, like culty, underground culty, like. We're culty, but
weird.
Don't tell anybody where we meet. And it sounds like a lot of secrecy.
Absolutely. And it's confusing for you, because even in, we were meant to be kind of confused. We didn't really know how the structure worked. We didn't have a name to call it. We didn't.
Were there elders?
So the elders were people who were married and they had houses, and your house could have Sunday meeting in it. And that was kind of, if you were an elder, that's what your job, what your role was.
All right. So I'm going to ask the question, and I'm this is my new term on Cultimatum, is the white elephant in the room. So if everybody knew that these workers were molesting children, why didn't anybody do anything about it?
So first of all, did the child tell somebody? Because you've been taught your whole life that these people are way, way, way above you and they're right. God's chosen. So that's the first kind of hurdle. Did the child tell anybody? Did the parent believe them? Because there's the next hurdle, because these people are so trusted. And third, did the church do anything about it? Typically, what the kind of accepted route was is that they would be asked to leave if they considered it to be, if they had multiple people come forward with an allegation. So if you had multiple people saying, yeah, this person's a creep, then the police would not be contacted, but the person would be asked to leave the meeting. That's another example of why that whole shroud of secrecy is so dangerous, because there was actually not that long ago, there was an overseer in Michigan who was actually, he went to jail for a few days.
Yeah.
Because he did not report sexual abuse, and he actually tried to say, his legal defense was, we are not a church, I'm not clergy, I'm not a mandated reporter.
Wow.
And so, yet they declared themselves as a church in the state. Yeah.
I think they really want to be able to play both sides as much as possible.
Okay. What year did you leave?
It would have been 2000, I want to say 2010.
Explaining kind of why you were kicked out, is there disfellowshipping, shunning, any of that goes on?
My mom, of course, was, like I said, she's spicy. She had questions. She was a big, I think, instigator as far as, you know, showing my dad, like, look at all this weird stuff that's happening. Isn't that weird? The big fallout happened when it was a kind of a discussion of the past. The actual event being discussed had happened long ago. I'm sure you guys remember the massive deadly tsunamis in Indonesia, Christmas, say 2004, 2005. It was a long time ago.
Remember it very well. It was at my parents' house in Florida when it hit. And yes. Yeah.
Absolutely. Now, I wouldn't know this, but of course, it was all over TV and everything. And yeah, huge. For some reason, his whole sermon that day was about how the righteous will be rewarded. And his whole story was about how there was a meeting group in Indonesia that met on high ground, and none of those people died that day. And how all of those people down on the beach and in the town and everywhere else in the valleys, if they had been in meeting, they would have lived too.
Okay. This is going to perfect segue into a topic that we haven't brought up yet. And we hear it often. what was your belief in death? If you, when you died, did you go to heaven? Did you go to hell? Or did you not die? You just ceased to exist? Because we've heard it all different ways. Like, so there's the lake of fire, right, Melody? And then there's I think in your house,
purgatory.
Melody.
Yeah.
Yeah. In some cults, you didn't die. Who was the one the woman who lost her baby? They just buried her, but there was no tombstone. Like, you just didn't exist anymore.
That was the house of Yahweh. That was, yeah, that's okay. The one that just aired. And that was our belief. Yeah.
Right. So what happened? And then I have a follow-up question to that. Oh, my God. This is so wacky. So talk to us about the death process.
So we all go to heaven, you all go to hell. That's it. It's very straightforward. If you're a 2x2, you go to heaven. Everyone else goes to hell. There's very little discussion of stuff like, you know, babies, children. I think the assumption is that if you were a child of a 2x2, you are grandfathered in. We're also considered to be pretty responsible for our own deaths, like this tsunami example, of course. And then I had a friend that I grew up with. I'm going to call her A. And she was really musical. She was really beautiful. She was really, really popular. And she was murdered when she was 18. She had left the church or stopped attending so regularly in the last few months. And they told her mother that if A had remained faithful, it wouldn't have happened to her. So it was very, very direct. Punishment for your sins, death for your sins.
The guilt trip. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Follow up to that. Medical. So perfect example. She got hit by a car, but let's say she didn't die. Could you go to the hospital? Could you get a blood transfusion? If you were diagnosed with cancer, could you get chemo? All that stuff. Was that all allowed?
Yes. Medical's fine. All medical stuff was allowed. Transfusions, chemo, all that stuff was totally, it was considered to be kind of God's science, you know?
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So after this guy made the very public statement about, you know, all these tsunami survivors or non-survivors and survivors, she asked him very publicly, like, are surrounded by all of the other people, I would really like to discuss what you said in this meeting. And he said, oh, I'd love to explain it to you so you understand a little better. And so she had my poor father going through their Bibles, highlighting things, sticky notes, all that, you know, this is all our evidence that God doesn't directly, you know, smite people that don't believe the same things that we do. And they tried to have it at a neutral location, which was an elder's house, which I don't think makes a whole lot of sense.
Very unusual.
Okay, so really, you mentioned the tsunami of 2004 and that the people on the high ground were saved.
Yes.
Okay, so that's a tsunami where people were, and logically, the smart people knew when the tsunami was coming, so they went to higher ground, whatever. What happened to other natural disasters like earthquakes and hurricanes and like these fires in California, other natural disasters? So I can understand the tsunami, there was a high ground. But in a hurricane or a fire or an earthquake, that just happened so suddenly. So you're going to tell me that somebody that was on the 15th floor of a building who survived an earthquake was saved because he was on the 15th floor? And
they did actually have an answer for this, kind of. They didn't go into, this wasn't a big discussion with all sorts of natural disasters. But an interesting phenomenon with the 2x2s is that no matter what, any kind of disaster, they'd come up with a story. My favorite was, they had a 9/11 one about some member that allegedly worked at the towers, but he happened to be running late that day. So they have this kind of story for just about every, you know, attack, natural disaster, about some righteous person that did live through it.
So the rest of the 3,000 people who died that day were...
deserved it.
Yeah. Well, oh, my God.
They were bound for hell. They were non-believers, and they were bound for hell. Yes.
Yes. So when this was explained to my mother, she was horrified. She was horrified. It was not, I don't know how cordial the discussion remained, And she just couldn't believe, you know, she said, you know, this person we know has cancer, do you really believe this? And towards the end, they let both my mother and my father know that they would not be welcome at meetings anymore.
I would have jumped up and down for joy.
My reaction. I mean, I have never had a good relationship with the church. I remember my first time I ever saw somebody that even looked like us, that I could recognize someone like this, was in like 2006 when Warren Jeffs got arrested.
Wow.
Newspaper clippings of, you know, the pioneer looking ladies being led out of the compound. And that was the first time where I was like, what the fuck are we?
Yeah. As a teenager, I would have been terrified seeing that, right? Like, those people look like us.
Absolutely. That's exactly how I felt, with questions, but they had no answer. What are we? We don't know. Non-denominational. Where'd we come from? We don't know. So I was overjoyed, but we never spoke of it again.
Okay. That leads me to we'll begin to wrap up. But there's part of your deconstructive process, which sounds like you were already halfway there, because when you left, you were happy. Where are you today in your faith in general? Like, do you believe in a God? Are you part of any organization?
Yeah. After all I went through with the 2x2s, I've kind of excused myself from solving like the mysteries of the universe. I have the feeling that like I did my time.
Okay.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. Good.
I feel
like we're there. It seems to me, and again, I'm sorry to everybody that I keep bringing this up, but it's my only reference to organized religion is the Roman Catholic Church. When I got the hell out of there, because I was brought up, you know, Roman Catholic from birth, baptized, confirmed. I went to Catholic elementary and junior and high school and college. But the minute I could break free from them, I was gone. And then I became an agnostic or even an atheist at some point. And now I've circled back and I believe in a higher power in the universe. But it seems like when we're children and this stuff is forced down our throats and then we become adults, that critical thinking kicks in and we start questioning all this crap that they taught us when we were younger, right?
Yeah. Yeah, really struggled with, and for a long time after leaving, and this sounds, again, really difficult to understand, but when I left, there was nothing. If you tried to Google it online, it was like trying to catch a ghost. All the phrases were so vague. And over time, I kept looking and looking and looking. I just felt like I could leave, but it couldn't leave me. I just had so many questions. And so I'd find, you know, a book from the 80s or a college paper or whatever, something. And finally, when the pandemic rolled around and I downloaded TikTok, you know, I had extra time, and I was really amazed by the algorithm and how it could do all these, find all these things that I had never told it. You know, it could just pick up all these things and give me all these really related things to me. And so I thought, I bet if I started posting, I could find somebody. I wanted one person. I wanted two people. Because I really never, no person I'd ever talked about this in real life to had ever known what I was talking about. I'm not a very good TikToker. I'm really camera shy and my voice gets shaky and my hand gets shaky. But it was so fast. We're at hundreds of people, thousands of people in my comments saying, me too, this happened to me too. People in my inbox telling me this happened to me. Or do you know who this person was? Do you know where I could report this? So that was, I think, really nice for me. It was good to kind of connect to other online resources as well.
I have some information for both of you, and maybe you did this, but I just, a lot of times when we do an episode and I do some research. So I'm on Google and I typed in 2x2 cult. And of course, the first thing that came up is Wikipedia.
Yes.
And it talks about William Irvine in okay. Ireland in 1870. All right. The very second search result, very interesting. It's the FBI. Says seeking victim information in 2x2 investigations. So the FBI is investigating them.
Yes. So what happened was
documentary, yeah. Go ahead, Kaylee.
In 2022, there was a very well-known worker who died in a hotel room. He had a heart attack. It was natural causes. But, of course, since everything's bought for the workers, all their devices get repurposed. So somebody opened up his computer and basically found all this evidence that Dean had been abusing many, 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 many underage people throughout his time. The first thing they tried to do is they tried to send a letter. Sierra tried to send a letter to all the Oregon members just to let them know this had happened and was not going to report any of it, was not going to make any of it more widely known. But this caused a big outcry. People got really, really upset. And the more he kind of Barbara Streisand did it, the more he tried to keep it, you know, within this small group of people, the more people were like, Dean did something to me, or Dean did something to this person I knew. And then by 2024, there's this incredible private investigator named Cynthia Lyles, who has done so much of this work in finding both perpetrators and victims. She's got a list of over 900 people that are alleged to have perpetrated something like this. And that's just people that are being reported. And each of those people could have hundreds of victims because of how much they move. And of course, Nightline, BBC, 60 Minutes starts coming in and doing things. And, you know, local police stations are getting calls and calls and calls. So finally, April 2024, the FBI opens up an investigation, which
good huge. For them. Good yes. for them.
Huge.
Okay. One more question, and then I'll see if Melody has any questions, and then we'll wrap it up. Before we started recording, you said at one point there were maybe a million people in this cult, and now you think they're down to 20,000. So that's in the course of how many years?
Say their peak was probably 50s, 60s, and they already kind of had kind of a decline, 90s, 2000s. And as of recent, like as you pointed out, Andrew, the internet's a hell of a truth finder. More and more people that Google it. Just look it up, which you are encouraged to do, certainly.
I just read three of the first sentences. There's pages of it. So wow.
So I certainly foresee that continuing to go down.
That's what I'm saying. And then one more quick question. You weren't in it during COVID, but we hear that COVID destroyed many cults because people were not allowed to meet. So they did the online meetings, but people don't really attend them anymore. Do you have any insight into COVID? And
destroyed us a little bit in a different way, in that the current membership is so old. And a lot of them wouldn't stop meeting each other. And one of the big things we do every Sunday morning meeting, is they have a cup, a glass of grape juice that they pretend is wine that they all drink out of, and they all pass it around the room.
Ugh, dummies.
So unfortunately, a lot of them did get COVID really bad. So a lot of them did keep meeting, and they definitely kept meeting through COVID. Definitely probably took their numbers down in another way, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make a prediction that I don't think this cult will be around much longer, it sounds like. No. Kaylee's shaking her head. No.
Well, it's definitely on the decline. All the secrets are coming out into the open. The light is being shined in the dark places. So I guess my final question for you, Kaylee, would be, and I always just like to ask our guests this, what would be your advice to somebody who either thinks they might be in a cult or is thinking about leaving or joining either one of those? What would be your advice to somebody in that situation that maybe doesn't know what to do? We might have kind of already addressed this in this episode, but I'm going to let you say it anyway.
So important to have somebody on the outside, no matter, you know, having someone that doesn't agree with you, somebody that doesn't share all of your beliefs. I mean, that's what got my family out in the beginning, was having my mom that wasn't so willing to accept things at face value. And on the other side, I've had a lot of parents reach out to me whose children are still in the group, and they're really scared for their grandchildren. And to those people, I would say the same thing, how important it is to have someone on the outside. And I actually really discourage people in that position from, you know, I know that it's so tempting to be like, here's this BBC article, here's this Wikipedia article, it lists the FBI investigation on the second line, but it's just not helpful. It's just not helpful. The most important thing for those people is knowing they have that safe, non-judgmental person that's waiting for them on the outside.
Well, if I was looking to join, like somebody, and we didn't talk about how people got recruited, but let's say I was recruited or I stumbled upon the 2x2 and I Googled them and I found those first three lines, I'd run for the hills. If the FBI is investigating the cult, I'm not joining this religious organization. I don't care how beautiful it sounds like on the outside.
People don't do their research. And then I think a lot of people are just contrarian. So those people are on the outside. They don't know it like we do. They're saying bad things about us. A big word that gets used for any outsider or ex, we call them exes, is bitter. We're bitter for still, you know, if you left and you're so happy, why are you still talking about us? You're bitter. And that's just the one word that gets used over and over again. If you have any negative feedback or recollections, but
that's their insecurity. So, all right, Kaylee, thank you so much for joining. What when we started this, Melody's at another cult you never heard of, and boy, no, I never heard of this, and another fascinating story, and just boggled my mind that people get involved with this.
Yeah,
I'll leave it at that. So,
well.
All right, Kaylee.
I want to thank you for coming on, and I want to thank your spicy mom because I think she's awesome and good for her that she protected her children and kept that critical thinking open in your life in order for you to be able to come out of it fairly unscathed because you seem like you're doing pretty good. But thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Wow. We want to thank Kaylee so much for coming on the show and helping us get a little bit of an inside view into this very secretive underground cult that, you know, I'm sure many of our audience hasn't heard of, and that I just recently learned about and Andrew just learned about tonight on the show.
You know, I don't know if it makes for a better episode when I don't know. You know, sometimes Melody and I will meet during the week and we'll go over the guests that we have scheduled to record. And she'll give me an update like this one is from this cult, this one's from this cult. And it just so happens this week was one of those weeks where we didn't get a chance to do that. And I just got home from work and I jumped on. But I kind of like being
surprised. The shock factor. I like the shock factor.
That's Andrew, where I was going.
I like it because I think you are representing at least a portion of our audience, meaning the audience who are also, because I know we have listeners that, like you, are not cult survivors. We have a combination of both. We've got our cult survivor listeners and we've got our non-cult survivor listeners. But I'm sure our non-cult survivor listeners especially, and maybe even some of our cult survivor listeners, relate to your shock at some of these stories. And they're like, yeah, I agree with that guy. I'm feeling just like him.
And I didn't, you know, the question was lurking in the back of my mind, as you know, that I will always probably ask the guests, was there any child molestation or predators or whatever?
Yes.
I didn't have to because she came right out with it.
I beat you too at this time because I knew because I'd watched the documentary and I knew there was a lot.
You watched the documentary, which I might even watch that tonight. But that's the shock factor that I get is that, so I'm one of these people who are part of this community and I have to put up one of these power players, whatever the freak they're called. And then I find out that my daughter or son, whatever, was molested because the next day they might come to me and say something. Or let's just say my daughter wasn't or a son. My next door neighbor says to me, oh, that person. The first thing I would do is just, I'm out. I'm out.
I'm sure some people did leave for that reason. I would hope.
But are these people, because we've talked about this before in other cults, where they sweep it under the rug and they explain it away and they blah, 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 blah. And there are people that are so brainwashed that they don't leave.
Yes, that's true.
And they rationalize it in their own head somehow. Because the leader has got them so twisted up in their heads.
Yes. Well, it's the brainwashing. It's the brainwashing that goes on. And it's almost like they experience this cognitive dissonance where they have to find a way to explain it away or justify it because it just does not match with the reality of what they think they're part of. That what they believe they're part of and the reality are two different things.
And I think right from the beginning, which I think was I was shocked at, because as we know, many cults do not let them watch TV or go on the internet or social media or have cell phones.
Right.
They're saying, sure, you can, you can't watch TV, but you can go on Netflix and you can go on, what was the other one?
Hulu.
Hulu. And, yeah. and you can go on the internet. That's the death of your cult right there, because people are going to critically think one day. Like she said, she said that she was becoming uncomfortable with what she was seeing. And now I doubt 10 years ago the FBI was looking into them, but it's just, to me, it's just, it almost sounds like I'm defending the cult. Why allow them to Google anything? Let's say this 2x2 wasn't on Google because nobody knew about them. But if I heard something in one of the barns that didn't make sense to me, I might go Google that and say, is it, you know, Google has changed over the years.
Well, and I think this cult has just recently come out. That's the other thing. And like she was saying, even back 10 years ago, you couldn't find anything when she first started trying to Google it. All she could find was a two by two board, like a piece
of wood. Right. But
Home Depot or.
But yeah. But that's what I'm saying. 10 years ago, 2x2 was not on Google's radar. All right. So because Google crawls the internet, looks for stuff. So, but if I'm in a barn, sweating my butt off, listening to some power player, whatever they're called, talking, preaching, and they say something that might not align with something that I, whatever, I'm going to go home and Google it and whatever it is. So I'm not going to Google 2x2. I'm going to Google something that he said or she said in her speech or sermon.
But to me, you won't if you're in a cult necessarily. I think that a lot of times, you almost are told not to. I know that there's lots of cults out there that are literally told, don't go Google us on the internet. Don't go. Scientology, I know, is one. I believe Jehovah's Witnesses is one. They tell you, don't go Googling because all this bad stuff's going to come up out because all the apostates out there are looking to, you know, tarnish our name. And there's all kinds of lies. You're going to find all the lies out there about us. So
maybe I'm different, but I would say then why is all that bad publicity out there?
That's the critical thinking. So
biggest, greatest religion out there, but there's so much anti-JW, why are you telling me not to go look at it?
I'll tell you what they would say. I'll tell you, because I was in a cult. What they would say is that we're being persecuted for our righteousness. So that's why there's all this bad stuff about there. They persecuted Jesus too, Andrew. This is how they brainwash you, and then you're like, ooh, wow.
I know.
That's just false persecution. It's crazy.
And that aligns with history, because the Spanish Inquisition had their persecution. The Germans with the Jews, and our whole history was some religion was persecuted. So it aligns with something
it's an easy out for them, right? An easy answer to say that's the reason there's so much bad publicity about us is because we're being persecuted for our righteousness.
But my retort to that would be, it's historical fact what Hitler did. It's historical fact what the Spanish Inquisition did. It's historical fact with what even back in the Egyptian times, they persecuted. I heard this recently. They took the Jews from Israel, or it wasn't Israel back then, but they made them slave, whatever. It's historical fact. So if I'm being told, don't go Google JW because you're going to find bad stuff about us, I would say, well, there was bad stuff written about Hitler. There was bad, and it was all factual.
Right. But then they would say there was also a lot of rumors about Jesus that were untrue. And they spread awful things about Jesus, saying he wasn't the Messiah and he wasn't this, and that wasn't the truth. And so they would just, I'm sure that would be their retort. Not that I'm agreeing with it. I'm just telling you that. That's the tactic they use.
And I guess, Melody, this is why our podcast is unique. You got my perspective, being a non-member or ex-survivor, and we got you, and I'm doing...
Yes.
I'm doing the critical thinking right up front. And
and I'm being devil's advocate.
And you're being devil's advocate. So, I mean, listen, I get it because, and I'll just say this and then we're going to wrap it up. I'm doing investigations into scams and people are falling for scams left and right.
Yes.
And people that are wise and intelligent and professors, and they're falling for stuff all over the world.
Yep.
And it just goes to show that you could be smart, you could be intelligent, you could be anything, and you will, if you got one weak opening, one vulnerability in your character, you're going to fall for something. And it could be a scam, it could be a cult, it could be
a toxic human trafficking,
toxic relationship. So,
yes,
okay, again, let's thank Kaylee so much for coming on the show.
Yes, and we want to thank all of you for tuning into Cultimatum. And as always, your support is appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as Apple and Spotify, it really helps us out. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group called Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, and Threads. Oh, and TikTok.
For the time being, because we still don't know what's going on with them.
As of the time that we're recording this.
As of the time we're recording, because it's still usable, but you cannot download it if you want it. So if you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And for any ex-cult members that are in need of additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
You can also check out my other podcast, the Anonymous Andrew Modern Dating Podcast, available on all platforms. If you'd like to help us out with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support through the link in our show notes called Buy Us a Cup of Coffee. Simply click on that link and it'll take you to their page and you can donate $5, $10, $15 or you can become a monthly member. And every little bit helps in our mission to spread awareness. Producing podcasts costs money and Melody and I need help in doing this. So please, if you can help us.
Yes, absolutely. And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.